This is Payments Ground Game, where we go under the operational hood of payments ISOs. Let's take a deep dive into the tactics you can use to strategically scale performance and your bottom line. Welcome to another episode of Payments Ground Game. I'm your host, Elena Smith, joined by my co-host, Kevin Smith. And today we have a special guest, James Shepherd, a well-known industry expert who's behind a few different successful businesses, including ISOAMP and CC Sales Pro. In this episode, we're going to talk about the significant shift in the ISO model over the past few years and do a little bit of forecasting about what's to come. Of course, it's almost impossible to predict what might happen, but we're seeing some trends and we really dive into those trends and talk about what they mean and where things are going. We also talk about the trend of point of sale systems transitioning from being predominantly processor agnostic to now favoring integrated payment solutions. And private equity firms are really honing in on this, which is changing the profitability landscape for processor agnostic POS companies. One of my favorite parts of the episode is that James shares details around his venture in the self-storage sector, and he unveils some lessons learned from an initial failure and then the way that he came back. This example really helps shed light on the specialized focus required in our industry today and the growing importance of vertical solutions. We explore the changing ISO model and the future of payment processing, delving into the necessity for operational efficiency and scale. You know, we love to talk about this, and we really get into the details of what that means in this episode. Plus, we'll cover some recent industry shifts, such as traditional gateway and terminal providers directly entering the market, upending old strategies and prompting a rethink on partnerships. So get ready to challenge the way you think about the ISO model and uncover what it takes to navigate in this industry moving forward. Stay with us as James Shepherd brings his perspective to the payments ground game. Let's jump right in.
Welcome, everybody. Today, we're having James Shepherd join us here. We've got, as most of you are familiar, James is in the merchant space, has been in the merchant space for quite some time. He's a content creator. He's obviously an educator, an innovator in the statement analysis space with his product ISOAMP. But I know you have some other projects as well, James, in the work. And, you know, we kind of wanted to get together today and share some time and ask you, what's going on? What are you doing? What are some of those other things that you're doing?
Well, first of all, Elena and Kevin, thank you both for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm excited about this new podcast you guys have started. It's fantastic. I've enjoyed it already. I have so much going on that, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to even get my arms around it. A lot of times, I think, you know, one of the interesting things when you, when you're into content and things like that, there's always the perception and then there's the reality. You know, I think the perception of me is I sit in a studio most of the day and record podcast episodes or something. truth of the matter is I'm an entrepreneur with four businesses right now. And, you know, we're constantly, you know, I'm more the entrepreneur, I think, than the content creator. But, you know, obviously you're going to be known for the content side, which I do love that part of the business. So yeah, right now we have ISOAMP, which ISOAMP now is the leader in statement analysis. We do, I think last month we did 4,000 statements.
Wow.
And yeah, then we also have the learning management system with that. So we have a lot of ISOs that do that, that part of it. I have CC Sales Pro, which is a consulting firm and a publishing company. Then we have CC Storage. CC Storage is an ISV that I started where we specifically go after self-storage properties to provide them with, you know, software management. And we'll get into all this, I'm sure, in the episode here. But I'm a big believer in what I call sub-vertical ISV. And so I wanted to build one myself so I could see what that was like. And then I have a new company that I'm not going to share too much about today, but I'll just say that these challenges we're going to talk about today, as far as bringing ISO, you know, bringing the agents and the ISVs together, I've been front and center at trying to solve that problem for several years, working with ISVs and then trying to work with ISOs on the consulting side. And I've decided to really take a whack at that and see if we can actually provide a solution to that problem ourselves. And so we're doing some different things to structure deals together better so that we can really help agents overcome some of the challenges. So yeah, my life is that, plus four kids, happily married, and I'm a youth leader at my church. So I have a pretty crazy life.
Sounds pretty busy.
Yeah,
a little bit. But that, I think that's a great segue into what we wanted to talk about today, which is what does the future of the ISO look like as things are changing and evolving? what does this new world look like? And you mentioned CC storage. I think that gives us a great idea of where you think it's going when you've invested so heavily in an ISV. So as this trend continues toward an emphasis on integrated and embedded payments, I think we can all agree that the traditional ISO model as we know it today won't exist in the future. What do you think that timeline looks like? What are the things that we should be watching for to gauge how quickly this transition is taking place?
That's such a great question. Let me answer it this way. I want to zoom out for a second, and I want to talk about an interesting reality with CC storage. So again, for context, this is a small ISV that services what we call a sub-vertical. In other words, if it was property management, that would be a vertical, whereas self-storage is a sub-vertical under property management. So in other words, it's a very, very tiny niche. So what's interesting about that is we have zero competition from, for instance, Square. So when we talk to somebody that's currently using Square, we steal them from Square every single time and they will never go back. So when you think about what does the future look like, what I find so fascinating is when I talk to ISOs that are struggling to compete with Square. And I'll say, the fact that you're struggling to compete with Square, you're literally two steps behind where the market is at. Square is already struggling. I just read a recent report of some of their distribution model challenges that they're looking at. And it's like they're already struggling to compete in this new reality, which is sub-vertical focused technology. And so the reason they can't compete with us is because we have gate integrations with like literally physical gate companies that, when you pull into your self-storage unit, we have integrations with like specialized insurance that's only for self-storage properties. And I could give you on and on this list. Well, on its own, it's not hard to build those features. Square has, 1,000 developers. I mean, they could build that out, but can they build the specific features and integrations that are needed across 3,000 sub-verticals or 5,000 sub-verticals and support those? No. So I think the future of ISO is, number one, first and foremost, it is about verticals, and it's about understanding what's happening with these individual verticals. As far as timeline goes, that is always a tricky one. I find that most people are usually wrong about this, myself included. Like, it's easy to kind of be really like aggressive. Oh man, in 3 years, the ISO is not going to exist, that it's, and I think that's wrong. I think it's also easy to say, the ISO model is going to be around forever. It's not. What that time frame is, I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say that in 10 years, we'll still have some traditional ISOs. There just won't be as many and they won't be as successful. The ones who are successful are going to bring vertical specific solutions to market.
I got one word for you. It's called checks. How many times have we said over the last 20 years, we'll never see another check again?
Exactly.
They continue to just drag along.
Yep.
Payment integrations with software is really key to this transition, in my opinion. And how do you think we should be looking or thinking about our relationships with software vendors and software developers? And they're all over the place. And I know we even struggle with that is, how do you find these guys, but how do you look at them and how do you relate with them? Because how that's been handled in the past is quickly and rapidly changing as they're learning more and more about the payment space.
Yeah, for sure. So I think to answer that question, again, I'm going to zoom out a little bit here because I think first of all, we have to clarify something. So when I say things like, oh, the legacy ISO model is dying or slowly going away or whatever, like what do I actually mean by that? Do I mean there won't be any payment companies left? Like, no, that's not what I mean. What I mean is there won't be anything in the middle. So let me explain what I mean by that. You have payment processing companies who specialize in being able to process a payment to, have APIs that enable us to do that. And then you have software companies that are going to market and selling software to businesses, and that software has integrated payments built in. What I would say is there's really not going to be much opportunity in the middle to say, well, we're like a payments company, and so we go out and we sell payments, but not really software, but we also aren't like a full service provider, like a payment processor that's moving the money. We're not that, like that is where you have a problem is the middle. So the reason I say that is to answer your question, our relationship with developers, the first step is the identity of your organization. Who are you? What is your company about? And so if you're like, well, we're a payments company. Okay, great. There's a huge opportunity right now for payments companies. If you're a payments company, how good is your API? How good is your documentation for your API? You know, how streamlined are your operating processes? How good is your underwriting? How good is your embedded merchant application that has a PayFac-like, you know, automated approval system? Like, that's what a payments company will mean in the future. So from that context, your relationship with developers is that they are literally your clients. They are your end users. Whether you're dealing with big software companies or small software companies, payments companies are going to be working with developers. So that's the relationship there. But then the other side would be, okay, no, we're not going to do that. We still want to sell merchants directly, right? We want to work with merchants. Okay, then you're going to be a software company. And so this is where everybody struggles. So it's like, you're going to be a software company. So that means your relationship with developers is that you're going to either hire them or you're going to contract with them in you know, other countries or whatever it is. And you're going to consider them a member of your team and you're going to become a software company. And you might be selling somebody else's software. You might be selling your own software, but you know, at the end of the day, your company is about software. And so as a result of that, you need to learn how to work with developers. They're very different, you know, types of people to work with and maybe salespeople. But they have to become, the way you deal with them is you make them a member of your team, or if you're a payments company, they are your client.
You know, I look at that as in the past, we have always looked at things from, you know, hey, we're an ISO, for example, and we work for a processor or we work for our own agreement that we have with this BIN sponsor and a processor, such as like a TSYS. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've always gone after these other sales organizations underneath us to expand our sales reach, so to speak, because they would in turn hire salespeople and we would provide the operating backbone for their business.
Right.
You know, and if what we're seeing here, I think is what you're saying, James, is, you know, those sales organizations, not that they're going away, but they're being replaced by these development houses that almost act as the ISO in that.
Yeah. So we're leading with the software rather than with an agent right. who's coming out with a pitch kind of thing.
Well, yes. Maybe. So here's the interesting thing. I actually don't necessarily see these two things as mutually exclusive, right? In other words, it's just, if I'm an ISO and I'm out there selling, it's the fact that now when I go and sell, I still have salespeople. I still have sales management, all these core competencies. I'm prospecting, you know, whatever it is. It's just that the two things have changed. Number one, I have to now be more targeted in my approach. I can't just go scattershot to everybody. And again, I'm saying this realizing that there are plenty of people doing this today that are fine, but like 5, 6, 7 years from now, you won't be going scattershot. You're going to have to focus on verticals. And even now you're going to be much more efficient if you do that. And the other thing is you're not leading with payments, you're leading with software. So that means you may have to acquire a software company. That may mean you have to hire developers and build your own software. And, you know, so there's these options. So I think what we're going to see is the successful ISOs, it's not like they're going to survive. They're going to do like massively better than they're doing now because they're going to buy a software company or create software or make a strategic alliance or partnership where they can sell software. They're going to take their sales resources. They're going to focus them on certain verticals. And they're going to create accounts that instead of having a 2-year, life cycle, they're going to have a 9-year life cycle. So I think the ones who make this transition are going to be massively more successful than they even thought possible as a kind of legacy ISO.
So it sounds like you still see a place for these independent agents, a sales force to exist in this new modern ISO world, but maybe they're just being more specific about what it is they're selling. They're not, like you said, the scattershot. They're not going out and, you know, whatever business they stumble upon, what is the best solution for this? Instead, they're targeted to it's this sub-vertical and they're looking for those specific business types because their solution is best suited for that.
So yeah, let me, that's a really great question actually, Elena, because I would say, so let me answer the question the way I would answer it correctly would be, yes, there is a place for an independent sales organization that has distribution to be able to thrive moving forward. Now, whether or not there's a place for a 1099 contractor to do that, I actually think that the jury is still out, and I know all of my haters will love that I just said that, but the problem is this. Selling in the new reality is more complicated. In other words, you know, I just finished a video today that I shot with a local restaurant owner of me selling a point of sale system and installing it and all of that. That was very hard. That was very complicated. There was a ton that of data and like information that was needed about that specific point of sale system. I had to understand how restaurants work. I had to understand what a menu was, what a modifier was. And so the challenge here is what we've seen historically is the 1099 contractor agents, many times they don't want any constraints and they often will not go through some, you know, training or certification process. They don't want to become kind of the expert in that. Now, there are huge exceptions. In fact, I was very encouraged recently, Elaine. I probably talked to, 100 and maybe 120, 130 1099s over like 10 days. I did a bunch of Zooms. And I would say the vast majority, Elena, were like, yeah, this is what we want. Like here, we already are choosing verticals. We already are making software partnerships. You know, we're trying to become the experts in this vertical. So I'm very encouraged by that. But again, the jury is still out because at the end of the day, the truth of the matter is it's just a lot easier to tell your W-2 employee that they are required to go through this training and they are required to, you know, use this demo unit and they are required to set up a demo in a certain way and they are required to not lie to the customer and say something like, so there's all these constraints. And when you're dealing with complexity, you need some constraints and some structure around the sales process. And so I think the jury is still out in terms of how is that really going to be structured? Maybe it's going to be like a model that brings it together, like maybe a W-2 straight commission, you know, thing, or I don't know. There's probably going to be some core structural changes to like the most successful ISOs that are going to really thrive in this new kind of reality, because the agents, they can't just go out there and sell, hey, I can save you money on payment processing. Like it's way more complicated and specialized than that now.
Right. I agree completely.
Well, and I think that brings up the other issue kind of at hand, which is with products and services that are out there. Is the term processor agnostic? Are we losing that? Are we losing that thought process of being processor agnostic with some of these products because of the specializations? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting with that one is, to me, the market has already spoken pretty loudly on that question, right? So, in other words, you know, what was the, if you looked at all point of sale systems 5 years ago, what percentage were processor agnostic? Probably 75% of all point of sale systems out there were processor agnostic. Mm-hmm. Now some of them might've been locked down with a processor like a Mercury or something like that, but they weren't doing their own processing, right? If you look at that today, the numbers are probably flipped, you know? So huge trend in that direction. And the reason is so blatantly obvious. I mean, this is a market for. So if I own a point of sale company and I am processor agnostic and I'm making $50 per month per merchant or $40 per month per merchant, well, I'm just such an inviting target to a private equity firm to come in and buy me and say, well, you're stupid and we're going to add payment processing. And instead of $50 a month, we're going to make $150 a month and we're going to triple EBITDA in 6 months. It's very difficult to fight off those market forces for a long period of time. Having said that, there definitely are some companies. And again, it's like, I don't like talking in extremes because the market doesn't generally work in extremes. You know, 10 years from now, will there be processor agnostic point of sale solutions and ISVs? Absolutely, there will be. It's that long tail effect. You know, right now we're seeing the huge kind of dropping off a cliff of like, you know, we went from like 80% being processor agnostic to like 20, but I think 20 to zero is like, never. That's like a long, long time. But again, it's more of these meta like trends that we're seeing of like, wow, this is happening. It's getting a lot harder. And again, that's just a pure market force. And if you're like, well, I would never, I'm going to stay processor agnostic no matter what. It's like, well, I don't know if I believe you. I mean, maybe you will, but are you telling me that in 5 years when you've built your company up and it really should be worth $2 million, but somebody offers you $3.5 million because they know they can monetize payments? You sure you're not going to step away from that and cash your $3.5 million check? I don't know if I believe you. So I think that's where we got to be really careful. If we're doing a deal with a quote unquote processor agnostic, well, we better have a pretty good contract in place that protects our interests in those situations.
I think a lot of people are finding that out relatively quickly here in the last probably 24 to 36 months.
Yes. It's been a bloodbath in many cases, honestly. It's been very interesting for sure.
James, I had a question for you about, how important is focusing on a vertical or niche. And you've already kind of spoken to that. It's very important. I think that you would agree that it's, you know, we need to, instead of being broad and being able to serve all of the different business types, we really need to focus. I'm wondering if you can maybe give us some insight sure. on how do we choose that? Is there, yeah. do you have any thoughts about, you know, you picked the storage market. Right. Was there a reason that led you to that? Did you just see that it was underserved? How did you go about that? Kind of tell us about that journey.
That's actually a really funny story. So 7 years ago, I had a client reach out. So I used to own a web design company, and we had a client reach out that said, "Hey, thanks for making my website, but what I really need is billing for my, you know, clients." So I looked around and I was like, wow, it seems like all the software that was available was really complicated, old looking software that was super expensive. And nobody had a really good payment integration. You know, it was just all kind of very clunky. So I, you know, thought, well, this is easy, you know? So famous last words of anybody that's ever built software. so we built it. We probably put, I don't know, maybe 70,000, 60,000 in development costs. And we went to market, total complete failure, total flop. Because it turns out that at that time, the average age, like I didn't look at demographics, like the average age of someone who owned a self-storage property was like 64. So
it's a favorite retirement plan.
It is, right? Yeah. So they were all taking checks in cash and they're like, "You want to charge me 4%, 3% like for payment processing? Like, are you nuts?" You know, like the reason they didn't have software wasn't because they didn't find any software they liked. It's because they didn't want to use software and they didn't want to pay for payment processing. They were already fully, you know, booked up and everything, no vacancies. So so I put it on a shelf about a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years ago. After COVID, I realized that there were some big market trends. I also was putting in the context of dual pricing and this idea of being able to say, "Hey, we're not going to charge you anything for the software and we're not going to charge you anything for the processing." So I was like, okay, maybe we could do this again. So this time I did it right. I had, you know, a little more capital to put into it. So hired a senior developer to run it. I hired a CEO to run the company. I have two full-time people we hired right off the bat to do support. You know, so we built a team around it, have marketing and all that. And we're like, let's go back to market really hard. So we spent maybe 8 months rebuilding the software, giving it all the features that it needed to go to market. And you know, then we went out there and went with it. So really kind of more happenstance as far as how we get into that particular vertical. But I've looked at it as a really interesting test pilot of just kind of like how to build this really specific vertical software. So I don't think it's maybe as important as far as like which vertical you go after. I would say you have to understand that vertical if you want to go after it. So think about what business type do you understand the most? That's probably a good direction to start.
That's great advice.
I agree. And clearly things are changing.
Yeah,
we have a variety of listeners that are, you know, listen to us, listen to you, James, you know, that have all different kinds of backgrounds. And like you said, I think that's specific, you know, finding something that quite not only that you know, but finding something you enjoy to get into. But let's break it down into the things they should be considering, given the role of the payments ecosystem. I mean, if I'm an agent, what should I be doing to modernize and fit into this new landscape? What if I'm an ISO? You know, what if I'm an acquiring bank?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think ultimately here there's distribution, and then there's operational efficiency, and you know, again, we mentioned service to developers. That's it. There's nothing else, right? So if I'm a sales agent or an ISO, I'm thinking, okay, my value, you know, because again, we could go back like several hundred years, you know, and go division of labor and Adam Smith and all that, right? The idea is, as a market kind of evolves and matures, you have a greater division of labor, meaning people only do one thing. You know, used to be people would, you know, grow their own plants, harvest their own plants. They would, you know, cook their own meals and all that. Well, now we have all these things are divided. So in the payments industry, what that looks like is if you're about distribution, then be about distribution, right? So if that's your expertise, you can sell stuff. Great. Learn how to sell stuff to specific verticals because that's the future. And then either make those partnerships with the software companies that you're going to sell for, preferably one that already has the payment processing baked in, or you're baking it in for them or whatever. But you know, you got to find that. And you know, that's what you focus on and you get really, really, really good at that. If you're really good at distribution in a particular vertical, you will have no shortage of potential partners that want to work with you. If you're on the other side, you're the acquirer, full service provider, whatever it is, it's like, well, now it's about operational efficiency. If you're large enough, well, then it's about consolidation. Obviously, when you're in a mature market, mm-hmm. everybody who's providing operational efficiency, well, guess what? It's more efficient when you have more scale. So there's, you know, be prepared to be acquired or to acquire others or whatever, and build that scale to you know, build operational efficiency and use technology and all of that, that I know you guys are very familiar with. So I think, though, that there's, again, my main thing is there's just not very much left in the middle. Either it's operational efficiency and building great APIs to compete with Stripe, or it's about selling merchants and building software. I mean, that's kind of all that's left in the payments industry now.
And you kind of alluded to consolidation, and I think we've already seen some of that, those acquisitions. We've already seen that kind of activity in the market. So it sounds like we're going to see that kind of thing be accelerated for payments companies as we are changing into this new world of, you know, what the ISO might look like.
Right. Yeah. You're either going to become a vertical specific software company, or you're going to be acquired by a payment processor. Like that's kind of where the value's at. Now, again, when I say vertical specific, I don't, you know, if you're a big company, I don't mean like you're going to focus, you know, your 75 agent team on one vertical. I just mean, you're going to change your core competency to say, here are the 20 verticals you want to service, and we're going to build it out accordingly. But you're either servicing verticals with software, or you're being acquired by a larger company and get, you know, again, giving them more scale and more efficiency for payments operations.
Yeah, in shifting a little bit back to what we talked about earlier, you know, the processor agnostic. Mm-hmm. We've obviously seen some changes in our landscape, some of them quite recently, with tools and products in our industry. Let's just say, for example, a gateway. There's a very large gateway out there, for example, recently that has just gone from selling wholesale to ISOs to now they're wholesaling to ISOs, but they also have a landing page that says, oh, but if you happen to need a processor or you're unhappy with your current processor, why don't you talk to us directly?
Right.
We've seen that with a gateway recently. We've seen that with a large terminal manufacturer recently. Yeah. I have mixed emotions on that. I'm kind of, you either live by the wholesale model or you live by the direct model. It's hard to live by both.
Sure.
Because nobody really trusts you in those environments if you're trying to share but not share.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, you know, I try to, it's interesting. I mentioned earlier that I'm, you know, a youth leader, and it's like, I tell people, you know, I try to keep my my nonprofit ministry work separate from my business work, because otherwise you start to get confused about things. So in business, the object is to make money. And so you certainly want to do that in a way that is honest, right, and transparent. You know, your reputation is crucial. But at the same time, I try really hard not to fault a company for a winning strategy in terms of making more money, which is the point of business. So I think, you know, for people that are like, you know, I talk to people all the time, oh, I just never saw it coming that this company was, it's like, I'm like, so let me, you never saw it coming that this company was going to try to make more money? Like, I don't understand. Like, it's like, yeah, they're going to try to make more money. If anyone is wondering and you have a partner right now and there's a way for them to make more money and you're not sure if they're going to do that, that's what they're going to do. Unless
I think the question is, are you sure or are you not sure that they're going to take you into consideration when they make that decision?
Yeah. And let me tell you how to make that decision. It's very simple. Read your contract.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like, well, I just don't know. I don't know if they're going to screw me or not. Well, let me ask you a question. Does your contract term allow them to screw you? If it does, expect them to screw you. And if you don't expect them to screw you, expect the people who buy them to screw you in 3 months when they buy them. Like, right? So to me, business is very, the thing I love about business is that it's very clear. You know, I'm thinking of a really specific example. I won't name names here, but a company that bought a gateway that did some very controversial things in order to dramatically increase profit for themselves. And, you know, a lot of people were so angry about this and, you know, and I understand to, you know, some extent, some people had been promised certain things, but to me at the end of the day, it's like, look, if you're dealing with a company that is quote unquote processor agnostic, right? So understand that they are actively considering taking payments in-house, or they're complete idiots. One of the two is true. If they're complete idiots, they probably aren't somebody you want to work with. So assume that it's a company that is currently in their board meetings. They're constantly talking about, why aren't we doing payments ourselves? Because we're losing a huge amount of profit. So approach the partnership from that context. And if it's not beneficial for you for them to take payments in-house, then make sure your contract reflects that. But if your contract doesn't reflect that, expect that it's going to happen because either they're going to do it or these really friendly, nice people who don't want to do this to make more money are going to sell to somebody who doesn't care about that and they're going to make more money. That's my philosophy.
I could not agree with you more on that.
You have to be realistic. Yeah, well, thank you so much, James. This has been really interesting and fun. We've appreciated the time with you. What would you say to somebody who's heard about the things that you're working on and maybe wants to learn a little bit more? Where is the best place to learn about those things and connect with you and that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. I'll give three locations. Find me on LinkedIn. I tend to post a good bit there. CCSalesPro.com. We also have quite a bit of content there, kind of a hub. And then also, if you're interested in statement analysis or learning management, like training, you can head over to getisoamp.com, getisoamp.com. So yeah, thank you both so much. I always enjoy doing these. I'm usually the one interviewing, so it's a lot of fun to be interviewed. I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks for having us today, James, and sitting down with us. I really appreciate it.